Jamie Laquan Bell, a 29-year-old man in Charleston, South Carolina, was just sentenced to more than 12 years in prison this week for distribution of crack cocaine. The timing of his sentence is ironic, given that the House of Representatives just passed the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010, which aims to significantly reduce the differences in sentencing between crack and powdered cocaine convictions. For decades, those convicted for possession or distribution of crack cocaine, mostly Black Americans, were given disproportionately higher sentences than for powdered cocaine, which resulted primarily in convictions for whites. As of now, someone convicted of crack cocaine possession gets the same length of sentence as someone with 100 times the amount of powder cocaine possession, resulting in an enormous racial disparity in sentencing. Additionally, a mandatory minimum sentencing law that required that a person in possession of as little as 5 grams of crack cocaine would have to be sentenced to a minimum of 5 years in prison. Now, after years of organizing against sentencing disparities and the mandatory minimum sentencing, racial justice groups can claim a small victory with the passage of the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010. While the bill is not retroactive or entirely fair, it does reduce the sentencing disparity based on amounts of possession to 18 to 1 instead of 100 to 1, and also eliminates the mandatory 5-year sentence. The U.S. Senate passed the bill in March. It now heads to the desk of President Obama for his signature. My guest is Julie Stewart. She's the founder and president of the organization Families Against Mandatory Minimums, or FAM. Welcome to Uprising, Julie.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, if you can explain for our listeners how difficult the laws on the books currently had been for African Americans convicted of possessing crack cocaine. What exactly has that meant for the prison population and for Black Americans in the prison population in particular?
Well, what it's meant is that they have suffered the extreme penalties more than people who are white or brown. For instance, 17% of the African American population roughly use crack cocaine, but 80% of people in federal prison for crack cocaine convictions were African American or are African American. Mm-hmm. So there's a large disproportion between those who use the drug and those who are actually in prison for the drug.
And now, can that difference be attributed primarily to the mandatory minimum sentencing and the sentencing disparities, or just enforcement of the law?
It's enforcement for sure. It sort of starts back a number of steps, but it's much easier to patrol in an inner city and see a couple of kids, exchanging drugs on a street corner and bust them for that, and then they prosecute them in the federal system, and because it took such a small amount of crack cocaine, only the weight of 2 pennies, to get a 5-year prison sentence, then those people would go into the federal prison system and serve this ridiculously long sentence. It's a little bit harder to go into the suburbs where there's probably more powder cocaine being used, but it's in closed doors behind gates, and it's not as easy to target those people.
And people get pretty organized pretty quickly against police patrols in suburban areas.
Perhaps, yeah.
Or it's less tolerated. So how is the difference in sentencing disparity justified, that you would have to have 100 times the powder cocaine in order to get the same sentence as somebody with crack cocaine possession? How did they justify this difference?
I think that it was not justified. I think it was based on fear at the time that the bill was passed in 1986. Crack cocaine was a new drug on the scene, and there was a lot of misinformation about the drug. There were news reports every night of crack babies, and try crack cocaine once and you're hooked for life. It was just a very heightened period of concern about crack cocaine because it was a relatively new drug on the scene. So members of Congress responded in a heightened way by creating these penalties that were based on absolutely no evidence that crack was 100 times more dangerous than powder cocaine.
And in fact, is there any difference in danger in terms of effects on the body and addiction between these two forms of cocaine?
No, what happens is that cocaine is cocaine in your bloodstream. In other words, your blood can't tell if you smoked it or if you snorted it. But the difference in crack cocaine is that crack cocaine, because you smoke it, it gets to your brain a little bit faster, and so you get high faster, you come down a little bit faster, and supposedly you want your next hit faster. However, there's also plenty of evidence that if you take powder cocaine, liquefy it, and inject it in your veins, that gets to your brain even faster than crack cocaine. So, by distinguishing between the two drugs based on the method of ingestion is an odd way to do it.
Now, this particular bill, the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010, doesn't treat both of these forms equally, but it does reduce the sentencing disparity from 100 to 1 to 18 to 1. Any idea how they arrived at that number, 18 to 1?
Yes, it is an odd number. They got there because there has been some evidence by certain authorities that the average street dealer carries about 28 grams of crack cocaine with him or her. And so if they're trying to target the street dealer with a 5-year mandatory prison sentence, then they're basing the quantity, the triggering amount of drugs that would the quantity that would trigger that sentence as being about 28 grams, which they have been told, authorities have been told that that's the amount of drugs that a street dealer carries.
So
28 grams if you do 28 grams for crack cocaine and it's 500 grams for powder cocaine, that creates an 18 to 1 difference between the two drugs.
I see. And what about the mandatory minimum sentencing? Is that essentially done away with this new law?
Oh, no, I wish, but no, that's not. All we've done is rearrange the deck chairs in some ways. In the past, 5 grams of crack cocaine, the weight of 2 pennies, triggered a 5-year prison sentence, mm-hmm. mandatory prison sentence. Now, 28 grams of crack cocaine triggers a 5-year mandatory prison sentence. So the prison sentence is still mandatory. It's merely the weight of the drugs that triggers the mandatory prison sentence has increased from 5 grams to 28 grams.
And as I mentioned, this law is not retroactive. So if President Obama does sign it, all of those people who are in prison, some of them with ridiculously long sentences for using crack cocaine, are not going to be affected. They still remain in prison.
That's correct. This was certainly not our ideal bill. But it was the bill we could get through, and we've worked on it for 15 years to try to change these laws, so we had to take what we could get at this point. But we are going back for retroactivity because our membership at FAM is largely people who are incarcerated or family members of people who are incarcerated, and we very much want the same justice to apply to them that Congress has recognized should apply to those coming into the prison system in the future.
And how did that happen? Was there retroactivity in the bill that was then struck down?
No, in this particular bill, there was no retroactivity ever included in it. It's a hot potato to talk about retroactivity. I think that we all made a strategic decision to make this a two-step process. And first, let's get the new bill in place. And the president will sign it. He has to sign it within the first 10 days after it was passed. So I'm sure it will be signed right away. It was one of his priorities during his campaign. And even just without retroactivity, it's an important bill. It affects approximately 3,000 people who will be sentenced for crack cocaine each year in the future, providing them with a sentence that's at least 27 months lower than they otherwise would have gotten. So it's a good bill in that it does make a direct difference in people's lives immediately. As soon as the president signs it, the next people that get arrested and convicted for crack cocaine will benefit from this bill. But because it's not retroactive, our job is not finished.
So 15 years your organization spent putting this or trying to get this law through. Let me ask you what the challenges were in organizing, particularly to get the Congress, to get the two houses of Congress to pass this. What sort of organizing did it take? And is there a particular reason why now was the right time that this bill was passed?
Well, I think that to your first point, last point first, the timing is important because we had to be far enough away from 1986 to make this happen.
And that was when those laws went into effect.
That's right. Crack cocaine and drugs in general were an important concern of the American public all the way up through the mid-1990s. I think that they dropped off from the top five sometime around the mid-1990s. And So you have to be able to distance yourself from the time when these laws came into effect. So that's one thing. Second, we have a lot of evidence today that was not available 20 years ago that says, you know, crack cocaine is the same as powder cocaine and there isn't a difference and we shouldn't have such a distinction between the two drugs. And all of that scientific evidence has helped build the case, both on the right and the left in Congress, for making a change to these crack penalties. That's long been understood by, you know, really both parties and everyone working on this issue, that the 100-to-1 distinction was too great. So what happened, you know, now to allow this to happen? I think that there was an enthusiasm among the public for this reform, partly perhaps because of President Obama's commitment to it. I think that members of Congress felt that it was, you know, a good compromise bill, that we weren't looking at trying to equalize the two drugs, that we've got this distinction between them still, because many members of Congress would not have supported this bill if it had been treating powder exactly the crack exactly the same as powder. So I think there was just a confluence of forces that made it possible to happen today. Mm. And really, a lot of credit goes to Senator Sessions from Alabama, a Republican, who has long tried to change crack penalties because he was a U.S. attorney for 15 years in Alabama and sentenced, prosecuted a lot of people going to prison for very long periods of time under crack laws. And he saw firsthand how excessive they were.
Well, certainly credit should be given where credit is due then. Well, Julie, finally, what are the next steps for your organization to try to improve this law?
Well, our next step is really to focus on retroactivity, because that is the priority now.
And so that would be trying to push a new law?
It's trying to make this law retroactive. That's right. It will be, you have to still go back to Congress to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But that's our priority, is to try to help apply this kind of justice that has just been acknowledged by everyone in Congress to those who are already in prison.
Hmm. And Julie, give our listeners the website for your organization if they want to find out more information.
Yes, please. They can visit us at www.fam, that's F like Frank, AMM.org, Families Against Mandatory Minimums, FAMM.org.
Julie Stewart, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Julie Stewart is the founder and president of Families Against Mandatory Minimums, or FAM.org. And we've been talking about the Fair Sentencing Act of 2010, which was just passed by the House of Representatives this week. The Senate passed it in March. It now heads to the president's desk for his signature, and it is expected that he will sign it. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, Ambrose Bierce once said, "Injustice is a burden which all those that we load upon others and carry ourselves is lightest in the hands and heaviest upon the back." That's Ambrose Bierce. That's Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day.